Didn't I say it was Luke? I did say Luke, didn't I? Or did I say Mark? I'm pretty sure I said Luke. Jesus Christ's genealogy. I didn't know it was that deep in Luke. Luke chapter 3. Luke doesn't get to this till chapter 3. It's the most amazing genealogy ever. The only time I know of that anyone's genealogy was traced back to Adam. Good morning, everyone. Martin Zender here on the Revelation series, making sense for a living once again from my laundry room studio. The thrill of this to me is that we are a common humanity, and this hit me when I saw the feet of that Greek statue. It's like, my God, he's got five toes. And the women all had five toes. Men and women, we do have a lot in common. Arms, legs, fingers, toes, ears, eyes, noses, mouths. We have many things, well, some key things not in common. I won't go into detail on that right now. That's a separate series. Luke chapter 3. The thrill here goes back to Adam and Christ. And I know it's a bit of a sidetrack here, but hey, I'm famous for those. Most of you like them. I've talked about this before, I'm sure, but this is fantastic. And my point is, where does this genealogy become fictional as we go back to Adam? We're all descended from Adam, which is a marvelous truth. Even though statues are descended from Adam, based on people who are descended from Adam. I suppose there were live nude models for many of these. You know, Leonardo da Vinci was looking at a live woman for his Mona Lisa. I read the name of the woman who sat for him, for Leonardo, but very interesting. Who knows? One of those Greek sculptures may have been looking at Paul as a model. Isn't that interesting? Paul may have been a sitting model for one of those statues. Fascinating. This is Luke 3, starting with verse 23. And he, Jesus, when beginning, was about 30 years old, being a son as to the law of Joseph. Now, I thought this was tracing his genealogy through Mary. I think that's what I mentioned to you. But it traces it through Joseph. Joseph of Eli, of Matat, of what? Eli. Oh, yeah, Eli was Joseph's father. Of Mathat, of Levi, of Melchi, of Janai, of Joseph. So Joseph was the father of Janai, who was the father of Melchi, the father of Levi, the father of Mathat. However you pronounce that guy's name, what mother would name her son Mathat? M-A-T-T-H-A-T. It's confusing. Just name him Matt or Hat, but not Matt Hat or Mathat, because I don't know if you make the T-H or if you just make it a hard T there. Very confusing. Anyway, that person was the grandfather of Joseph, who was the paternal side of the Christ thing. Of course, we know that Joseph wasn't his literal father in that he didn't provide the seed. That seed was miraculously implanted into the uterus of a teenage Israelite girl. Goes down the list here, and, you know, all these people lived, got up in the morning, ate breakfast, ate lunch, ate dinner, went to a play, played on the swing set with their kids. We're familiar with some of these people, and it gets down to Eliakim, Menah, Nathan of David, of Jesse, of Obed, of Boaz, of Salmon, like the fish. I'll just call him Fish. Fish would have been the great-great-grandfather of David. David of Jesse of Obed of Boaz. Could it be great-great-great-grandfather of Fish, of Nashon, of Aminadah. Feel sorry for that kid in the first grade trying to learn how to spell his name. But we know these people. And it goes back to Perez of Judah, of Jacob, of Isaac, of Abraham. Heard of those people? Who is Abraham's father? Who fathered Abraham in the city of Ur, the city which was inscribed in a stone that I saw recently. Holly, don't. Holly, can you hear the dog here barking? Thanks, Holly. It just adds ambiance to the laundry room experience here. So, Tara. Now, people might admit that Abraham and Tara existed, but now it gets scary. Tara was of Nabor, who was of Serug, who was of Reu. Reu was a great-great-grandfather of Tara. You know who Reu's dad was? Peleg. You know who Peleg was? That was the guy during whose days the earth was separated. The continents drifted during the days of Peleg. You know, we had a supercontinent here on the planet. And Peleg's father was Eber. His father was Shelah. Canaan was his father. And then we get into Arphaxad. Cruel name. Arphaxad of Shem of Noah. You know what? Jesus Christ treated Noah as an historic personage. As in the days of Noah, he said, so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. Didn't Jesus realize that the flood of Noah was just a little parable, was just a happy little story about animals coming into an ark that people invented to explain some greater spiritual principle? How does Jesus Christ be so ignorant to treat Noah as a guy who actually existed? Because he did exist, he did build an ark, animals did come into it, and all the inhabitants of the earth were destroyed except for 8 people. Factoid. Of Lamech, of Methuselah, of Enoch, of Jared, of Mahlil, of Canaan, again, the name of another guy, of Enoch, of Seth, of Adam. Adam. And who was Adam's progenitor? Of God. That's right, God. So actually, Jesus Christ's genealogy is being traced to God. Isn't that interesting? And everyone's genealogy on earth can be traced to Adam and therefore to God. So everyone here on earth, even the jerks, are of God. Because they all have feet, most of them, and, you know, 5 toes. Some people are born with 6 toes, I've heard. Some cats have 6 toes. Ernest Hemingway's cats all had 6 toes. I was recently down in Key West, and I was at Ernest Hemingway's house. I don't think I've told you that. It's only an hour and a half from here. Love Ernest Hemingway, and he owned 6-toed cats, and there are 22 cats on the premises of Ernest Hemingway's house, and many of them still have 6 toes. I saw them lying on the bed of Hemingway. Hemingway wasn't there. He's dead, but his cats live on in memory of the great writer. Who won the Pulitzer Prize for The Old Man and the Sea, the shortest book he wrote. It was a novella. So Adam is of God. You are of God. Atheists are of God. The most hated Hitler was of God because he can trace his lineage to Adam. It makes you a little more forgiving toward humanity when you realize that we all come from a common root. And there is no humanity apart from Adam. And there is no salvation apart from Christ. Adam, Christ is the answer to Adam. Now, back to A.E. Nock here to take over when we left off. Oh, I want to tell you about a miracle tomorrow. I'll start tomorrow's show talking to you about a miracle. You remember I said those who believe in evolution, they think we're crazy for believing that Adam was created by a breath of God. Yet they're the lunatics for believing that a 3-toed sloth could somehow develop from a mushroom. It's just, they're insane. Well, no, they're not insane people, but they're just insane on this one topic. They're not thinking it through. We should exercise grace toward those individuals who think that evolution makes sense, but God breathing, creating a being out of the soil is ridiculous. This is true intellectualism when we look into the source of things. Again, choose your faith. Evolution requires faith. Our belief requires faith because there's no video available of Adam rising from the soil. I wish there were. There was? I wish. In either case, I wish there was video of Adam rising from the soil. I think we'll see it someday. I think if we want to, I've fantasized about this before, we will be able to ask God, like, I'd really like to see videotape of that first day of Adam walking around. Did he hobble like a newborn horse? Actually, no. What's a newborn horse called? A baby horse? Okay. Or is it a colt? I'm going to go with baby horse. I think they come right out. They're a little wobbly. Their knees are a little bendy. They look like they're walking on stilts. But I think they come out walking around. Human beings don't. We come out as blobs. just lay there and kick and cry. It takes us 2 years to learn how to walk. Some of us, it's embarrassing. The human race is designed to embarrass you. Your body is designed to embarrass you. Back to A.E. Nock. To substantiate the interpretation that apostate Israel has a golden cup which intoxicates the nations, we must show that they control the finances of the world and through them provide pleasures and amusements which corrupt and debase the people. This is happening. This is a review. I read some of this yesterday. Most of us are aware that there is enormous wealth in the hands of the Jews, for this has been the case for centuries. Yeah, well, they built the temple and overlaid things with gold as ordered of them by God, and gold is as valuable now as it was then, possibly more. Yeah, I think it's more valuable than. Probably people had gold coins and didn't even think about it back then. But few know of the marvelous financial organization which even in the Middle Ages controlled the money market of Europe. Governments went to them for funds even at that time. Who's them? The Jews. Today, this financial system is not confined to one continent, but embraces the whole world. Now we're starting to talk about the one world government, the one world currency, and so forth. International banking is under full control of Jewish financiers. It is said that at one time, the head of the House of Rothschild prevented war between two countries by simply refusing to lend money to the two belligerents. You want money for a war? I'm not going to give it to you. Suckers, you just start a war without any money. We can't start a war without money. Then forget it. It's amazing. Now, new material here coming now. The debtor is the servant of the lender. This is the key to Armageddon, I'm telling you. This is the key. As innocuous and innocent as this sentence seems to be, it's the key to Armageddon. The debtor is the servant of the lender. And the Jews who control the banking and the money, they're the lenders. And the rest of the nations are the debtors. And so, if you can't repay your lender, the only thing to do is to eliminate your lender. And so the nations gather against Israel at Armageddon at the end of this age, the battle of which is never fought because God comes and wipes them out. But the armies do amass at the valley called Armageddon. The debtor is the servant of the lender, even if it be a nation. If a government owes another nation, it is not free to do aught which that nation would disapprove. That's right. So you're beholden to the hand that feeds you. It's another way of saying what Mr. Nock just said here. So also with the Jews, for they are, for all practical purposes, an international nation. That's interesting how it's located in the Middle East, this nation of Israel, this tiny nation. And yet, in another sense, it's an international nation because Jews are scattered all over the world and they hold the purse strings. And purse strings is that which controls government. Money controls governments. Kings are beholden to the money holders. So now we're talking again about shadow governments, about governments that appear that way on the surface but that are run behind the scenes by bankers. The country which owes them huge sums dares not disoblige them. Oh, they're going to try to dislodge them. Let me read that sentence again. The country which owes them huge sums dares not disoblige them. They have to do what they want. In these days, money has more power in politics than any other force. Didn't used to be that way. This any other force used to be tanks, used to be bombs. Bombs and tanks now are not needed to take over the world, only money. And it must not be offended. No one knows how deeply indebted modern nations are to these international bankers. And again, I remind you, this is written in 1930s. But all are agreed that they exercise an enormous control. And if they should openly pool their interests, as they will do when they establish their headquarters in Babylon, they would immediately become the paramount political as well as financial power in the world. That is a sentence pregnant with meaning, and we are today watching the development of this. And don't let anyone tell you that these things are far away, because they are happening now. And I remind you that the scriptures say that in the last days these things will happen quickly. These things will quickly come to pass, speedily, rapidly, when they start happening. When they start happening, it will be a crescendo. We saw that with the charts of that I showed you of how the information age, how the age of interconnectedness, the age of globalism has just taken a exponential upward swing. Well, the same exact thing is going to happen when this comes to pass that Mr. Nock is saying here. When the finances come together, when the resources are pooled, and then all it takes is a very short time to rebuild Babylon. We think Babylon necessarily has to be a Disneyland, has to look like this amazing, I can never think of that crazy new city in the Middle East. Let's just say Los Angeles or whatever. A.E. Nock said that in his day, in 1909, when he moved to Los Angeles, it was a sleepy Mexican town. Within 15 years, it became a metropolis. So it doesn't take long to build these cities, especially with technology. If you want a city, bang, you can have a city. And bang, they're going to have a city.